what I found in my own marriage was that Kathy would say early on, she would say, well, do you love me? And I think, well, of course I love her. But what she was really saying was, I need emotional connection from you. And I'm not sure you even know how to give that.
That's Jim Burns, and he's with us today on Focus on the Family, along with Doug Fields, his friend and co-author. And your host is Focus President Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller.
We want to encourage you to prepare for marriage if you're in that zone right now. We want to have you do that in healthy ways, to grow together as a couple and to learn to celebrate your differences and become one. That is what the scripture says, become one. And you think it's going to be easy when you're engaged. Wait until you're married.
Oh, no.
And the toothpaste and everything.
It's fun, though. It's a fun journey.
It should be a fun process and hopefully not too annoying. And I guess that's the point. We're going to equip you today with our guests addressing this issue to help you see the right side, the humorous side, the fun side of marriage, and I hope lift it for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jim Burns and Doug Fields both lead the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University, and they're very popular authors and speakers. And get this, Jim, they say that between them, they have over 75 years of marriage experience from which to share.
I'm not going to divide that number. Could be 1 year and 74. I don't know.
I don't think either of them married that long.
Hey, Jim and Doug, welcome to Focus.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Great to be here. And when you said that number, you looked at me, Jim. I'm just a little bit offended.
I didn't look at anybody. I looked at the wall.
Okay. Well, we'll see. We'll look at the
tapes. Well, you've been 44 years. Let's just get it out on the table.
Exactly. And I do know the day. It was August 9th because it was also it's the day of my daughter's first birthday. But on August 9th is when I asked Kathy. So
well,
I wasn't,
you're totally outside the norm.
I'm totally
it wasn't the holidays.
No, it wasn't the holidays.
It wasn't Christmas. How could you do that?
I know. Well, I was desperate. And I was afraid on August 10th.
She was slipping through.
I was afraid on August 10th she'd say no. So I knew August 9th I had it.
You wanted to get married August 11th, right?
Exactly.
August 9th was the proposal. Let's get married August
11th. I wanted that. It didn't happen. It was 1 week after college graduation, and I have three daughters, and if they would have got married 1 week after college graduation, I would have, like, you know, croaked.
Found that boy and...
But that was kind of worrisome, but it's been a great run.
Well, let's get into it, Doug, for you and Jim both. How did you meet your wife? How did you get started? How long did you date, engage, and then get married? How many months? Just to give a little background
of
your
experience.
Yeah,
for me, ballpark, I met my wife when I was a freshman in college. She was actually a senior in high school, and I was at a friend's baseball game and saw her, and we started a conversation, went to a Christian camp where we worked together, and I fell in love, knew I was going to marry her right away. She didn't. Took her about 6 months. But we dated for 2 years, and we actually got engaged in August also. August 27th, gentlemen, 1984.
Good,
I remember the day.
Oh, there you go.
Because it was our two-year anniversary of dating. So that was
good.
Our story.
With me, I met Kathy the very first day in college, Azusa Pacific, and I was sitting in the nerd section where people like me would sit. She was sitting in the front, and I said, see that girl down there? I'm going to take her out on a date. And you know what those guys did? They laughed at me. They literally laughed, and I think they said, yeah, right. But it did take me a while. We became just friends first, and then she got a boyfriend, and she kept saying, what should I do with this guy? And I'd say, break up with the guy. There's somebody better. And
so you became the consultant.
I was the consultant, but I was always consulting in one direction.
A little biased.
Yeah, not a good counselor.
When did she arrive at the understanding that you were kind of...
December.
Yeah.
December. We held hands for the first time, and that was a big deal.
She liked your input about her dating life.
She did, or she was desperate, or the other guy. No, she had dropped that guy. So actually, it was really kind of neat to start as friends first, to
absolutely.
Be honest. Because we were friends before we became, you know, boyfriend and girlfriend. That was a big deal. And then we dated all through college and, like I said, got married 1 week after college.
Hmm. Now, in your book, The First Few Years of Marriage, 8 Ways to Strengthen Your I Do, you really press on this idea of drift, which I like that concept. I think the question that I have for you is, why does it occur, the drift, and describe what it is so that those that are drifting better understand what they're in? Because sometimes you don't even notice it. So what does drift look like, and why do we go there?
No. Yeah, I think the drift happens in any relationship. It's not just a marriage relationship. I've just, in the last 5 years, married all three of my kids off. And, you know, they stand at the altar with this great expectation, share these vows that sound beautiful, but they're very unrealistic. And they don't have a intention for their marriage to drift, but it's going to. It's just by the natural course of all relationships. You have an aim, you have a direction, you know where you want to go, but because of apathy, because of regularity, because of comfortability, we just begin to drift. And what Jim and I talk about is all relationships drift, and really the secret of the course corrections.
Well, let's get into that. So a couple that's listening or an individual who's married going, yeah, I think we're in that drift stage. What does drift feel like, first of all? I really am serious about that. We're assuming people know what drift is. Give us a definition or description, what that feels like, what that looks like.
I would say that it's a feeling of it just doesn't feel like it used to.
It's more like business?
Yeah.
We're roommates?
It's not the same. And I think roommates is a pretty significant drift. I mean, think about the minor drifts. If you're on the course for some destination and you get just 1 degree off, you're gonna miss it.
Right.
But that 1 degree is subtle, you know, in the moment. So I feel like it in a marriage, it's like, we're just not clicking. This isn't what it used to be. It doesn't feel right. Yeah. We're like two trains going in a different path. I think it takes on various degrees, don't you, Jim?
Sure, it does take various degrees. And it's a little bit of distance. And again, you can have a small amount of distance or a large amount of distance. And a lot of people do marriage with distance. Yeah. And so when you know you are distant, you're either going to choose to make those course corrections or you're going to basically choose to stay on the same course. And then you get in trouble. Yeah. So the secret is make the course corrections early in your marriage if you can.
Yeah, and I think that's the key thing, and that's the reason you're here today, is to help these couples that are recognizing that it's become a little mundane, go to work, pay the bills, have some discussion. Right. Probably on the surface, things look okay. That's really what you're saying. It's the average couple who's been married maybe 5 to 10, maybe 20 years, and they just notice they've fallen into this rut. That's who you're really addressing. And in that context, let's move to some of the solutions. You know, you mentioned 8 ways to make the I do feel better and resonate. So let's go over them. What are the 8? Just give us the list and we'll dig into a handful of them.
Okay. I'll tell you the list. One is laugh daily and date weekly. Second is slow down. Third is celebrate differences. Fourth is choose the positive. Fifth is fight fear. It's in conflict. 6 is have great sex. 7 is enjoy the baby. And 8 is keep your promise.
Okay, now you're right, Jim. You mentioned they sound pretty easy. Yeah. Why is it so difficult?
Well, I mean, a sinner marries another sinner, and then you have sinnerlings eventually.
Sinnerlings.
Sinnerlings, that's what I call my kids.
And what do they call you?
The sinner.
The sinner.
Sinner and sinner. Mr.
The
and Mrs.
primary sinner.
But, you know, in reality, because we miss the mark, you know, we do miss some of those kind of basics. I mean, Doug was talking right there. He mentioned laughter, and we say, no, have serious fun in a marriage. And a lot of marriages used to have fun. You know, they had fun when they were dating, and then they sort of quit dating or they quit having fun. Remember, our daughter Heidi came home from babysitting one day, and she said, Mom and Dad, oh my gosh, Scott and Anita, they're so amazing. They're the best parents I know. Of course, that makes us feel terrible.
Right. We love hearing that from your kids.
But they are so fun. But they said something. When you were their youth pastor, they said, you, Mom and Dad, were fun and funny. And then this pause.
Awkward pause.
More like, she didn't say it, but was like, what happened to you? And, you know, I got thinking about it, and I thought, you know, Kathy and I don't have as much fun as we used to. And we're actually pretty disciplined. I mean, we're doing a weekly date and things like that, but it wasn't the fun atmosphere. Now, that's both for parenting and for marriage in many ways. And what we find is that when couples invest and are proactive about having fun, it really does make a difference.
Yeah, it's an important aspect, but it's easy to lose the fun because you are down into the business of being a couple, being a family, paying the bills, making the money,
and all
those kinds of things.
And if you don't make a proactive, intentional appointment, you know, Doug often talks about the 1%.
Yeah, we actually have found when Jim and I do our conferences or talking to couples, we're blown away by how few people actually date one another. So, you know, they pursue one another, they date one another when they're married, and then they stop. It's like we say I do, and then we say I don't to dating. So what we say is your marriage worth 1% of your time? Because if you know, and everybody in the audience would go, well, of course it's worth 1% of my time. Well, 1% of your time is an hour and 40 minutes a week. And so we call that a date, whether that's at night, during the day, it's an intentional time to be together where there's no kids. There's no calendar. We're not talking about finances. We're not talking about work. And if you start that, you know, that's why we started this, you know, wrote this book, The First Few Years of Marriage. We want people to start right. Because when you start talking about people who've been married 20, 30 years and you say, hey, you should date, they're like, gosh, I can't even remember the last time we went on a date where we didn't talk about kids or calendar or finances. So,
but they can pick up if they have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, something is better than nothing. Start somewhere because, you know, we all feel guilty about things we should be doing, but sometimes a couple just needs to be reminded or shaken or encouraged or motivated. If you put 1% into your marriage, that's about 15 minutes a day, knee to knee, eye to eye, just talking, connecting. Again, not talking about the problems of the day. You know, how are you feeling? What would you like me to know about your heart today? I mean, something connecting. And then an hour and 40 minutes a week, that's a real doable deal.
No, that is good.
And that's a course correction.
Now, let me play the negative side of that and rebuff me. I'm asking for you to correct me. So if you have the rationale that...
I've been doing that for 20
years.
Yeah,
thanks, Jim. Yeah.
And we keep inviting you back.
But this is the first time I've asked you to do it. But Jim, seriously, you know, you're busy and you have a good relationship and you think that will be enough. Like you got enough in the bank. You are laughing together. There are good things, but it's busy and I don't got time this week to do the date night. Something's come up and next week the same story happens again. Or maybe it's the wife saying, you know, there's so much to do. I want to help the kids with their homework. I'm just thinking of all the excuses. And how does a couple put the excuses to the side and say, no, this is critically important? Because I could be that person. I know, Gene, we could be that couple. We have been. Sometimes we don't date for a long time.
Right. Well, you know, again, I don't think are legalistic about you have to date this week or, you know, your marriage is awful. But, you know, what I find is, you know, if I work out, but I don't work out for a long time, guess what? You know, my muscles start to atrophy.
Okay, now you're really going. Yeah. Right.
Double dip
but
here.
I didn't tell you to talk about that.
Right. But, you know, my muscles do start to atrophy. And I think the marriage atrophies way before we even recognize it. And sometimes it's that we're just so busy doing other things, but they're all good things.
Right.
So what happens is, and I think as couples, and the couples who are a lot of your listeners, they're overcommitted, they're underconnected, but they're overcommitted doing good things. I mean, you mentioned all good things, help the kids with the homework, all those kinds of things. At the same time, you know, it has to be a priority. And I think it helps in the relationship, but also for people who have kids. You know, my kids would kind of go, you guys are going out again? But it was actually a good thing. And now my married daughters, guess what they do? They go on dates because mom and dad did, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, and it's one of the issues about busyness, too, is that is one of the excuses that we hear more than anything. And it's one of the things that we talk about as a course correction, because sometimes busyness is busy in activity and not in priority.
Well, and you're making choices. And I guess that was the root of my question.
Yeah. Well, it's a priority, too. You know, we have God, our marriage, our children, and then our vocation. Now, I can't speak for any of the rest of you all, but I get that confused all the time. Sometimes I get my vocation mixed up with my relationship with God. Kathy and I have been child-focused as opposed to marriage-focused. And at the same time, again, I'm not going to say to a two-year-old, you know, there's some peanut butter, you know, over in the closet. Why don't we're going to go out for a couple of days and take care of yourself and change your own diaper. You're not going to do that.
Right.
But you can. What we have found is that when we help people understand the incredible benefits of this, it's just great
and fairly simple.
If we take it back to the first few years, how many of these disciplines are lacking in the younger couples that you see? Because I'm just thinking about a lot of the younger folks I see, and they're already busy in their own separate orbits, and they don't ever bring it all together.
Yeah.
So is it common for that to happen?
I think it's very common. And you know, just speaking personally, I mean, Kathy and I got married and we went on a 10-day honeymoon, came back. I was a youth pastor and we were busy and focused and she was working and I was working. And for us, we had to look back maybe at 5 years and say, wow, you know, we're not as close as we were. We really have drifted. And you know what? I'm not sure we even knew what it was. So then we had to start asking. This is very personal for Doug and I writing, because we wrote it partly because we said we wished we would have had this. Mm-hmm. But we started realizing some of the basics we had just dropped along the side, not because we were, you know, not wanting a good marriage, but because we weren't willing to do the discipline. I like to say this phrase, you know, there's pain in life and it's either the pain of discipline or the pain of regret. And marriage is a discipline and having a good marriage is a discipline. And so for these younger generation, they do get distracted and they do get busy. And I understand.
But those first few years are crucial if you want to have a good long-lasting
marriage. You're going to build a foundation in those first few years, or you're going to have to rebuild it later and pay the price.
You know, when you look at some of the symptoms of what takes place in a marriage that's drifting, for me, one of those things I observe and hear here at Focus on the Family pretty consistently, especially for newly married couples, 2 to 5 years, let's say, is this idea that I can't change him.
Yeah.
Speak to this issue of changing your spouse into something more to meet your needs versus working on yourself.
Well, I'm kind of giggling because all four of us would say we haven't had a very good, you know, response to trying to change our wives over the years.
We've
right?
tried.
Yeah, yeah. I would say, you know, collectively, that's not going to, no. you know, get a lot of enthusiasm. I can remember one time my wife had set the toilet paper roll on top of the toilet paper holder.
That's a terrible thing.
Well, I know. And I'm thinking, really, sweetie, how long does this take? You know, and then I showed how quickly it can be done, and it's seconds.
And she embraced that. And
how was that response?
She was so happy for me to coach her.
Thank you for showing me this.
Exactly.
How was the couch that night? Was it good?
Yeah. And because Jesus rolls the toothpaste from the bottom and not the middle, sweetheart, you know, we should do that as well. And what I realized, all these areas that I wanted her to change in, they were really obnoxious and dumb and petty. I mean, that's where it started in marriage because I had been doing my life my way. And I was just realized one day that my wife is incredible. She's faithful. She's godly. She's fun. She's mellow. She digs me, you know, all of this stuff. Like, who cares that she every once in a while doesn't put the toilet paper? And I realized that instead of trying to change her, there are a lot of things in life that I just had to minimize. And that, because if in marriage, in any relationship, if you want to fight over stuff, you could fight over it all the time. So for me, I kind of learned early on that changing Kathy was really a dead-end street.
Yeah. So what's the God lesson in that, Jim? I mean, what is God trying to do in marriage? I'm always thinking about that. He created the institution. It's his. He draws two opposites, typically, not always, together. He doesn't do it to irritate each other. He does it so that you can become selfless.
Exactly. And we have to learn to embrace those differences. Many of them are God-given differences. Both Doug and I talk about the fact that we're both extroverts and our wives are introverts. And I think Kathy Burns' introversion, can't speak for Doug, but I think Kathy Burns' introversion actually drew me to her. She's a great listener, incredible. She's deep, on and on. Once we got married, that drove me nuts. We'd be in a room and I'd have a shallow conversation with everybody and she'd have a significant conversation with one person. I'm thinking she didn't meet everybody. And in many ways, what I had to do was realize that, no, God created her that way. And so I have to learn to embrace that. Now, there are some things, we talk about this in the book, talking about there are learned traits. Communication is a learned trait. That's something different. But there's a lot of things that God places in our hearts way before we knew each other. And we have to actually, I believe, learn to agree to disagree and to embrace them. And the phrase for me is, does it really matter? I mean, does it, and Doug said it so well, does it really matter if the toilet paper roll goes one way or the other, or if the toothpaste tube? It really doesn't matter. So what we have to learn in maturity with a marriage is, does it really matter? Now, some things matter. Abuse matters. You know, addictions matter. I mean, there are things that matter. But a lot of stuff, it doesn't really matter.
How do you get to that point, though, that you understand that and can be mellow, to your comment, Doug, about your wife? How do you get to that point? Because for some reason, these things irritate us.
Yeah.
And we tend to, you know, kind of punch back verbally, whatever it might be. How do we get to the point where we can say, okay, you know what, that doesn't really matter? You guys have learned that. Not everybody has.
Yeah.
How do we swallow the irritation of it and go, okay, no big deal?
Well, I think it takes tending your own soul. And you know, some people want to say, well, no, it's fixing your spouse. No, you're not going to ever fix your spouse. It's, you know, Doug said that so well. There's a phrase a woman gave to me one time that said, untended fires soon become nothing but a pile of ashes. And I honestly believe God was speaking to me through her statement, because if I don't tend my own soul, so I find that I'm much better at playing the does it really matter when I'm more centered, when I'm tending my own soul, when I'm taking care of my own spiritual life, and when I'm aware of the beauty of my wife in so many ways, then it's easier to do. If I'm running my life at too fast of a pace and if I'm not taking care of my own soul, you know, it's tough.
Let me read you a question that I've got here. And the reason I'm setting it up this way is it's challenging to me. And I just want to be honest about it.
Yeah.
But it's this idea that we serve our spouse and fall in love again every day.
Yeah.
Wow. That at first, I guess my first thing is, that sounds like a lot of work. And I know that's not a healthy perspective, but be honest with me.
Isn't servanthood a lot of work?
It is.
You know, you were going after it a little bit ago when you asked Jim the God, you know, where's the God piece in this? And, you know, ultimately, you're never more like Jesus than when you serve.
Wow.
And so what we have found, or I have found personally, is that I am the most selfish human alive. Really, I'm the president.
That's selfish of you to think you're selfish.
No,
I think I'm the most selfish person.
No, I'm more. I mean, I'm the president of the Doug Fields fan club because I'm always thinking about myself and my comforts and my needs. And, you know, even in the middle of the night when Kathy hears something downstairs and wakes me up and says, can you go check that out? I'm like, no, you know, and this is to the person that I love more than anything else because, but I don't want to get out of bed or when the baby's crying and you lay there and you pretend that you don't hear it. And the key
you did
word
that?
There, pretend.
Oh,
yeah.
I did too.
And the baby was on my side of the bed.
Okay. Now we're fessing up.
Yeah. So really, isn't marriage and life about being, you know, less of yourself and more of others? So the closer I am to Jesus, the better a husband I am to Kathy.
You know, we're four guys sitting here at the table. Let's put on our wives' hat and try to think from their perspective. Oftentimes in a new marriage, what the wife is desperately wanting is that emotional connection. Mm-hmm. And, you know, men think compartmentally. We, you know, what's the task? How can I fix it? We've done many programs on that. We know how the different brains work between male and female. But speak to that woman, if we can represent her in fairness, that I want that emotional connection. I get the physical, and I need to be present there. But what I really need is that heart from my husband, and I'm not getting it. How can she help to develop that? I know it's good to work on yourself, but I'm starving, guys. My husband is not meeting that emotional need in me. What should I do?
Well, I think it obviously comes along with the husband, but let me talk about the wife first. Doug and I do these Refreshing Your Marriage conferences together, and a woman will sometimes come and say, I'm not getting it. We talk about intimacy, and intimacy, women get it. It's connection. It's what you're talking about.
Right.
Men think intimacy is just sex, and you know, there you go. But intimacy, it's not happening, and I want this, and I want this, and that. And I say, well, have you told him? And she'll oftentimes go, well, no. I mean, that ruins the spontaneity of the romance.
Right.
And I say to her, you know, men are kind of simple, you know, but you need to tell them. So what I found in my own marriage was that Kathy would say early on, she would say, well, do you love me? And I think, well, of course I love her. But what she was really saying was, I need emotional connection from you. And I'm not sure you even know how to give that.
Well, to be even bolder, I could hear that conversation going, of course I love you. Look what I do for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's how a man will react.
Right.
And she's going, I could care less.
No, exactly. Exactly. And so, but I think a woman can teach a man as long as she's not doing it in a negative manner, because it's very important to have that positive connection. And I think a woman can teach a man how to do that. But I think she has to be very careful and delicate because we have our, you know, poor self-images as well. But I think when a woman says, you know, here's what I would like, and not really put the bar so high, I think she can kind of teach and train. It's kind of funny to say train your husband. But, you know, there's a biblical verse about training your kids. Well, I think husbands, wives need to be trained too. And I think that's an important thing. And then men actually literally do need to learn how to be more effective at emotional connection, because it's not, for many of us, it's not our strength.
It doesn't come naturally.
But you can learn it.
Correct. This has been terrific, you guys. I hope people have really grabbed onto this. And it's just the beginning. You know, whenever we do an interview, the meat is mostly in the book. And you guys have done a wonderful job identifying these early years of marriage, what the needs are, and this idea of drift and 8 ways to counter the drift. Jim and Doug, thanks for being with us.
Thanks. It's been
great to be with you, and thanks so much for what you all do around the world.
On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller.
I liked what Jim was saying today about marriage being a discipline. This indicates that there's going to be effort in marriage, and it's going to be a daily commitment. I hope that you heard the heart of these guests today, encouraging couples to build a solid foundation so that you don't have to rebuild later and pay the price. Jim and Doug have authored a brilliant resource for newlyweds called The First Few Years of Marriage. This book will help couples rekindle romance, fight fair, and deal with stress, the challenges of the first baby, and much more. You'll find it online at safamily.co.za or give us a call on 031 716 3300 to order. We've been touring the country enriching marriages with Dr. Steve Bass as we've presented marriage seminars entitled Radical Marriage. Steve's been teaching couples to develop strong connections, improve communication and conflict skills, and identify key areas where couples need to change individually and then together as a couple. You can catch Steve presenting our Radical Marriage events at Pinelands Presbyterian Church tomorrow night, and then at Mountain View Baptist Church on Wednesday night, the 21st. We're also hosting a Radical Men's Morning event, which is happening at Mountain View Baptist Church on Thursday morning, 6 for 6:30 a.m. And then finally, you can join us at Fully's Full Gospel Church in Fishhook on Thursday night for Radical Marriage. Tickets are 50 Rand and available through Quicket. And all the details are at safamily.co.za. We do hope to see you there. Thanks for being with us today. I'm Alison Schnell for Focus on the Family Africa, inviting you to join us for the conclusion of our program tomorrow, when we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.